All right, so today we're going to kind of do like a deep dive into American politics. And we've got this really fascinating document here. And it looks like some kind of daily briefing overflowing with political and economic news, like almost like we're peeking into a time capsule from February 26, 2025.
It's not just the headlines, though, right? I mean, reading between the lines, you get
Yeah.
a sense of like the public mood and the strategies that politicians are using, the anxieties that people are facing.
Totally. And I think that's what makes this so interesting, right? It's that snapshot of
Life.
this moment in time. Okay, so let's jump into it. One of the biggest stories here is this budget battle brewing in Congress. The House just passed a budget resolution barely by a vote of 217 to 215. And as you might expect, it was pretty much a straight party line vote, except for one Republican, Representative Thomas Massie, who voted with the Democrats.
Interesting. So that close vote really kind of like underscores how divided Congress is right now, right?
Yeah, and it's not just like a disagreement about numbers. It's like these really deep ideological differences that are going to be really tough to bridge. And then the numbers themselves are pretty eye-popping. The House bill proposes some significant cuts, sets limits on how much the deficit can increase, and of course includes new spending.
Of course.
But here's where it gets interesting. There's this massive gap between the proposed cuts and the potential spending,
Huge red flag.
like trillions of dollars.
Yeah, if the cuts don't match the spending, where's the money going to come from?
Exactly.
This could mean like more borrowing, which could drive up interest rates
Yeah.
and potentially even like slow down the economy. I
Right.
mean, this isn't just some political game.
Right.
It has like real world consequences for all of us.
Absolutely. One of the areas they're eyeing for cuts is Medicaid, and it's not a small amount either, almost $1 trillion over the next 10 years.
So Medicaid's like a lifeline for millions of Americans.
Yeah.
Any cuts are going to face strong pushback, especially from Democrats.
Yeah.
This could become like a major political battleground and a key issue in upcoming elections, for sure.
You know, it's tempting to view this whole budget process as like this high stakes political chess match.
Well, there's certainly a lot of political maneuvering going on.
Right.
We can't lose sight of the fact that real people's lives are affected by these decisions, right?
Absolutely.
Cutting Medicaid could mean millions of Americans losing access to health care.
Right.
That's not a game.
Yeah.
It's a matter of like life and death for some.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what should the role of compromise be in a situation like this?
That is a great question.
Right. And remember, this House bill is just the first step. The Senate has already passed its own version, which is significantly different. Now, a conference committee has the unenviable job of trying to reconcile those two bills.
Oh boy. It's going to be a tough negotiation.
Yeah.
Both sides have dug in their heels, and there's immense pressure to avoid a debt ceiling crisis,
Right.
which would have catastrophic consequences for the economy.
All right.
So the question is, can they find a compromise that averts disaster without sacrificing essential services and programs?
So they
Or will political gridlock just like prevail?
I mean, that's the big question, right? It's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
So it's interesting how this whole budget battle is like unfolding against this backdrop of really harsh rhetoric aimed at federal employees.
Yeah, it's like they're being used as scapegoats in this larger political narrative
Right.
about the role of government.
Yeah, and it feels like an all-out attack coming from some corners. We've got figures like Charlie Kirk, who said federal employees are less than desirable, and it wouldn't even make the cut at Chipotle.
That's harsh.
And then you have Laura Ingraham suggesting that they need to get real jobs in the real world.
I mean, it's incredibly dismissive language, right?
It is.
It devalues the work of millions of people who are serving their country.
Yeah.
It's important to remember that these are teachers and scientists,
Right.
healthcare workers, and countless others who keep our government functioning.
Right. And let's not forget Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who basically said outright that federal employees don't deserve their jobs or their paychecks.
These statements are not only offensive, but they're also strategically designed, I think,
Right.
to exploit existing distrust of government among certain voters.
Right.
It's classic us versus them tactic,
Yeah.
and it can have a real impact on public perception and ultimately policy decisions.
And it's worrying because words have consequences. We actually received some anonymous letters from federal employees expressing their anxieties and sharing their experiences. One reader who works at the VA wrote about being told to submit a 5-bullet-point response to the whole DOGE situation.
Okay, so for those who might not be familiar, DOGE refers to the dismantling of the Office of Government Ethics.
Right.
It's been a controversial move by the current administration. Critics are arguing that it weakens oversight and accountability.
Right.
So it's understandable why federal employees would be feeling vulnerable and uncertain in this environment.
And this reader described a feeling of darkness over the VA.
Oh, wow.
And urged veterans to contact their representatives because at the end of the day, it's the veterans who will be most affected.
Right. It's a stark reminder that political decisions have human consequences.
Yes.
These aren't just abstract debates happening in Washington, right?
Right.
They directly impact the lives of individuals and families across the country.
Absolutely. Another reader shared their wife's experience with this 5-bullet-point mandate, saying it felt like the whole exercise was just for show. That it didn't really matter what anyone wrote.
That sense of feeling devalued and unheard can be really demoralizing and lead to disengagement.
Yeah.
It feeds into this narrative that government is inefficient and out of touch with the needs of its citizens.
It's really disheartening.
Yeah.
You know, because there are so many dedicated people working in government.
Absolutely.
And it's ironic, isn't it, that some of the people who are most critical of government are often the ones who benefit the most from the services it provides.
Absolutely. There's a real disconnect between the rhetoric and the reality.
Right.
And this kind of demonization of government workers can undermine public trust.
Yeah.
And make it even harder to attract and retain talented people in public service.
Yeah. Speaking of disconnect, let's look at what appears to be a growing trend toward controlling information and silencing dissent.
Okay.
Which is ironic considering the source.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump seems to be borrowing tactics from authoritarian regimes.
Yeah, it's a disturbing trend that we're seeing emerging. With these various attempts to control the narrative and suppress any voices that challenge the status quo, it's a classic power play.
Yeah.
And one that historically hasn't ended well for democracy.
Take the Associated Press, for example.
Okay.
They took a stand and refused to use the new name for the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
Sticking with the internationally recognized name, and the White House retaliated by barring them from press briefings.
This is a clear attempt to punish an organization for not towing the line.
It is.
The AT is a major news organization.
Yeah.
With a vast reach. So this sends a chilling message to other media outlets.
Right.
Report favorably or face the consequences.
The AP didn't back down, though. They filed a lawsuit.
Good for them.
But it ended up before Judge Trevor McFadden, who's known for being favorable towards Trump. And as you can imagine, he hasn't been too eager to intervene.
That's a major concern.
Yeah.
The judiciary is supposed to be an independent branch of government.
Right.
A check on executive power. If judges are perceived as biased or beholden to political interests, it undermines public trust in the legal system.
Totally.
Yeah.
To make matters worse, the White House then decided to take control of the press pool.
Oh, wow.
Essentially choosing who gets access to information.
Really?
They claimed it's to ensure the press pool reflects the media habits of the American people in 2025.
Okay.
But it feels like a thinly veiled attempt to silence critical voices.
That's a classic authoritarian tactic.
Yeah.
By controlling who has access to information, you can control the narrative.
Right.
And limit exposure to dissenting viewpoints.
Exactly.
It's a dangerous path that erodes the foundations of a free and open society.
And it's not just the White House.
Yeah.
Elon Musk has been on the attack as well.
Really?
Going after Reuters for suggesting that DOGE's actions were politically motivated.
Okay.
And he urged his followers on X Twitter, which for anyone not in the loop is what Twitter is now called, after Musk bought and rebranded it.
Got it.
To dig up dirt on Reuters.
Musk's behavior is a prime example of how social media can be weaponized.
Right.
To spread misinformation and attack perceived enemies.
Yeah.
It's a worrying trend because it undermines trust in legitimate journalism.
Yeah.
And fuels a climate of hostility and division.
Well, and someone dug up a purchase order from 2018 showing the Department of Defense paying millions to Thomson Reuters Special Services for a cybersecurity study. And Musk took this completely out of context, claiming Reuters was involved in large-scale social deception.
Wow.
Even though the contract had nothing to do with their news division.
This is classic cherry-picking of information to fit a predetermined narrative.
It is.
It's incredibly irresponsible, especially coming from someone with Musk's influence.
And, of course, Trump jumped on the bandwagon demanding Reuters return the money.
Oh, gosh.
Conveniently ignoring the fact that the contract was issued during his own administration.
It's a perfect example of projection accusing others of the very things you're guilty of yourself.
Yeah.
This kind of hypocrisy further erodes public trust.
Right.
And makes it incredibly difficult to have a reasoned discussion about complex issues.
Well, and then Musk went after 60 Minutes accusing them of election manipulation and calling for their journalists to be jailed.
Oh, wow.
Because they've been critical of DOGE and the gutting of USAID.
This is where it gets really dangerous.
Yeah.
Labeling criticism as criminal activity is a tactic straight out of the authoritarian playbook.
It is.
It's designed to silence dissent and create a climate of fear where people are afraid to speak out against those in power.
To top it all off, Musk blocked all Signal links on X Twitter.
Signal, for those who don't know, is a messaging app known for its encryption and privacy features.
Right.
Often used by journalists, activists, and whistleblowers.
Exactly.
So this move raises serious concerns about censorship and suppression of dissent.
Yeah.
It contradicts Musk's supposed commitment to free speech.
Right.
And suggests that he's only interested in protecting speech that aligns with his own views. Yeah, even the Dallas Morning News got in on the act, pulling any Doonesbury comic strips that were critical of Trump.
Really?
Their excuse was that they didn't want to be a microphone for a cartoonist on a crusade against the president.
This type of self-censorship sets a dangerous precedent.
Yeah.
Media outlets should not be afraid to publish content that might offend those in power.
Right.
A free press is essential for holding leaders accountable and ensuring transparency.
Well, it's a stark contrast to when President Gerald Ford said Doonesbury was one of the three things keeping people informed about what's happening in Washington.
That speaks volumes about the changing relationship between those in power and the media.
It does. It makes you think about that quote from Representative Francis E. Walter back in the 1950s, about how controlling the media is the same as controlling the mind.
Wow.
And we're seeing attempts to do just that playing out in real time.
It's
a chilling reminder that the battle for information and control of the narrative is far from over. Makes you wonder what all this means for the future.
Yeah.
You know, like of a free and open society.
I think a healthy democracy needs a free press.
Right.
And citizens who are willing and able to engage in critical thinking.
Right.
You know, and when you see these efforts to control information and silence opposing views, it's a warning sign that those in power are more interested in like maintaining their own control than serving the public good.
Well, on a slightly more hopeful note, there has been a bit of good news for abortion rights advocates this week.
Okay.
The Supreme Court rejected an appeal against a buffer zone law in Carbondale, Illinois.
So this is a small but significant victory in the fight for reproductive rights.
Yeah.
Buffer zones are designed to protect patients and staff at clinics from harassment and intimidation by protesters.
Right.
You know, imagine trying to access healthcare while being yelled at, threatened, or even physically blocked. Buffer zones create a safe space for people to exercise their legal right to healthcare without fear and intimidation.
It seems like a common sense measure.
Yeah.
Even Donald Trump uses buffer zones to keep protesters away from his rallies.
Oh, the irony.
Right.
The irony is not lost on me. Those who claim to be champions of free speech often seem to have the least tolerance for speech they disagree with.
Yeah, this case in Carbondale is particularly interesting because the city has seen a huge influx of patients seeking abortions since the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade.
So just to clarify for our listeners.
Yeah.
The Dobbs decision essentially took away the federal right to abortion, allowing individual states to decide whether or not to ban the procedure.
Exactly. And many states, especially those surrounding Illinois, have enacted near total bans.
Right.
So people are traveling from places like St. Louis, Nashville, Louisville to Carbondale to access essential health care.
Wow.
The Carbondale buffer zone law is pretty straightforward.
Okay. It
keeps protesters 8 feet away from anyone entering or leaving a medical facility within 100 feet of the building.
Okay.
So it doesn't prevent them from protesting.
Right.
It just prevents them from harassing patients and staff.
It's a compromise that aims to balance free speech rights with the right to access healthcare safely.
So an anti-choice group challenged the law, but the lower courts upheld it based on a precedent set by a case called Hill v. Colorado back in 2000. And they appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, hoping to overturn Hill. The court rejected the appeal, but Justices Thomas and Alito made it clear they'd like to see Hill overturned.
That's a red flag for abortion rights advocates for sure.
It is.
The makeup of the Supreme Court has changed significantly.
Right.
And the precedent set by Roe v. Wade has already been overturned.
Right.
This suggests that the fight over buffer zones and abortion rights in general is far from over.
So it's a win, but a cautious one.
It does feel like we're in a constant state of vigilance, you know, waiting for the next attack
right.
on fundamental rights.
Yeah. This deep dive has taken us through some pretty turbulent waters.
It has.
From budget battles and attacks on federal employees to attempts to control information and the ongoing fight for abortion rights.
What's striking to me is the level of polarization and division we're seeing across all of these issues.
Yeah.
It reflects a deep erosion of trust in institutions.
Uh-huh.
And in each other.
It leaves us with a lot to think about.
For sure.
Given everything we've discussed today, from the budget battles to the war on information and the fight over reproductive rights.
Yeah.
What does this all say about the state of American democracy in 2025?
Big question.
Are we at a turning point, or is this just another chapter in the ongoing struggle for power and control?
That is the question we all need to grapple with.
Yeah.
The answers aren't easy, but asking the tough questions is the first step toward finding solutions.
Well, that's a great point to end on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll be back soon with another exploration of the forces shaping our world.